As we continue this session, Scott and Joanne talk about how to forgive. Let's join this session in progress.
We just talked about five misconceptions about forgiveness, and maybe that's just giving a new light to forgiveness that you've never thought about before. Maybe you can relate to some of these misconceptions. But even if you understand what forgiveness is, it doesn't make it easy. And so now we're going to spend some time just talking about how do we do it. Forgiveness is not an easy thing. It's difficult. It's painful. And we don't want it to sound simplistic or easy or just decide to do it and do it. It's a hard thing. And so we want to acknowledge that. And we want to give you some ideas of how forgiveness happens. And so we're going to share with you four routes to forgiveness, four ways that we can get there, four ways that we can think differently or respond differently that can lead us to forgiveness. As we do that, I just want to say again that forgiveness is important not only for the other person that has offended us, but most importantly, it's important for us. If we can deal with that anger in our lives by covering it with forgiveness and moving in that forgiveness direction, we can live at peace. We can have a healthier lifestyle. We can help our children understand forgiveness and live at peace, a sense of freedom. We don't have to go around trying to bring justice into the situation. We don't have to go around and try and fix everything. We can have a freedom in our spirit because we've forgiven now. And so that's where we're going, and that's why we're going there, because it really helps us to be a healthier, happier person if we've learned how to forgive. So now we're going to share with you four routes to forgiveness.
Most people find this to be difficult, the idea of forgiving. I mean, it's a hard thing to release the offense when someone's hurt us quite a lot. And so these four routes will help you to do sometimes the mental gymnastics you need to do to turn this, to release the offense, and to turn this over so you're not having to live with it for the rest of your life. The first route or route to forgiveness is understanding. Understanding the other person. In Luke 23:34, Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they're doing." Those are words that Jesus said from the cross. He was forgiving from that point, even in that difficult situation. See, Jesus understood his attackers. He knew that they didn't realize that they were just pawns in Satan's hand. Because Jesus understood more about them and more about God, he was able to forgive them. Deeper understanding is one of the roots that will allow us to trust God and forgive someone who's hurt us. One 13-year-old boy growing up in a single-parent family was very hurt and just needed this whole idea of forgiveness so much. We worked together for several weeks trying to understand what forgiveness is, what it means for him, how he could do it. And we explained this route to forgiveness, and after a couple weeks he said this, "I'm not as angry anymore. Whenever I start getting really upset, then I try to think about why the person is doing what they're doing. I know they're not just trying to hurt me. They're just focusing on other things like greed or their own hurt or wanting attention, and they do things that are hurtful. I still don't like it, but it helps me not to take things so personally."
So the first route to forgiveness is understanding, trying to see where that other person is coming from and acknowledging that. We don't always know the whole story, and we just want a sense of understanding for that person. A second route to forgiveness is recognizing our own offenses. Matthew 18:23-35, Jesus responds to Peter's question about forgiveness by telling a story of a servant who was forgiven by his master, but then turned around and wouldn't forgive someone else who just owed him a little bit. And it was a picture of how we have been forgiven so much by God that we need to be forgiving of others in relationship to that. Recognizing our own offenses is important because that's another route to forgiveness sometimes, to realize that, you know, there's a lot of people out there who are maybe angry at me. And if I have offended someone or people are angry at me, I want them to give me the benefit of that doubt, to give me a second chance, to offer me grace. And so we want to turn around and offer that to others as well. It's another way to get to forgiveness.
Route three is to let God be the judge. You know, probably one of the best passages in the Bible that helps us deal with this whole issue is Romans 12:17-21. It says a lot of great things in there about how to deal with this issue, but one of the things it says is this: "Do not take revenge, my friends, but leave room for God's wrath." You see, when we become bitter, in essence, we've taken the justice system into our own hands. We become the judge and the jury, and the sentence on this person is our anger, and so we lash out at them. You know, we weren't made to carry around the justice for the world. We weren't made to carry around the injustices of our own lives. We just weren't made to do that, and when we try to do that, we get ourselves into trouble. One single parent told us a story about the jelly donut. How she used to work in a donut shop, and her job was to take the donuts when they came out, the ones that were had to be filled, and she would stick a donut on that jelly donut filling machine, and she would pull the lever down to fill up the jelly donut. Well, one time she decided to see how much jelly could fit into one donut. And so she kept cranking and pulling it down, counting the times that she had to pull it down. And pretty soon she pulled it one too many times and the jelly donut exploded. Well, here's what she decided to do. She would pump the jelly donut up one less time than needed to be exploded. Then she stuck them on a tray and she sold them. And so the people would be over there eating them, and as soon as they took a bite into it, the thing would explode. Well, we had fun with her and her son talking and laughing about that story. But the point that we're trying to make is that sometimes in our lives, we're like the jelly donut. And we can't handle all of the things that we try to store up in our lives. We've got to let it go, or we're going to explode in our own lives.
You share the fourth route to forgiveness is that we want to see the benefit for ourselves in forgiveness. Sometimes the only reason we're able to forgive is because we realize we need to forgive for our own benefit. There are a number of personal benefits to forgiveness. In Matthew 5, 23 and 24, those passages speak about worship and how our worship is hindered if someone has an offense against us, if we have relationships that are strained, and that can hinder our worship. Also in Matthew 6, 14 and 15, our forgiveness from God is connected to our forgiveness of others. So we want to be careful in our lives not to be holding offenses against other people, but we want to be freeing them up so that we can stay open and free to be doing that. This has got to be the best route of forgiveness for me. When I feel tempted to want revenge, to hold on to anger, to respond with anger and bitterness, I know I need to step away from that and offer forgiveness because I don't want to be an ugly person. And I know that anger makes people unhappy and unpleasant. And I think we all know people who are just angry people, and they respond to all of life through this grid of anger and bitterness. And I don't want to be that way. And so often, I will choose to forgive just because of that reason. I don't want what it will do to me. And so it's really not about the offender at all, but it's about me and keeping my own heart clear. And so that's another route to forgiveness. It's just recognizing the benefit for ourselves.
To illustrate this idea about anger. You know, sometimes we store up anger, we accumulate it like a bank account. And so we have what we call an anger bank here. And I'd like a volunteer to come on up and help me explain and show how our anger bank works. Okay, Dean, come on up here. Come on up here on the table. This is an anger bank. In fact, it says on the top, put in a coin to discover the difference between money and anger. Now, you all have to listen very carefully so you can hear what it says. I got some coins here. Why don't you put in a coin? And the point is, we're trying to understand the difference between money and anger. So listen very carefully. Go ahead. And the answer is that if you try to save up anger, you'll explode. Thank you, Dean. We do need to be careful about our anger. And you know, God has included four routes to forgiveness in the Bible. That's really helpful because there's some that you might find one more attractive than another in order to deal with a particular problem. In fact, some problems are particularly difficult and you may need all four of them in order to try to deal with a particular situation that you're experiencing. But you want to allow these routes to lead you in the direction so you can release the offense so that you can not carry that around in your life. You weren't made to do it. If you carry it around, you're going to explode. We want to be able to deal with it in healthy ways.
Your ability to understand and deal with forgiveness is important just in your own lives because of the pain that you experience. But it's also important for your children who are growing up in a single-parent home. And often they experience a lot of pain and hurt as well. And so we want, as parents, to teach our children the skills that they need to be successful in life. And so you'll want to spend time just modeling forgiveness, offering forgiveness, receiving forgiveness, even within your family, apologizing to your children for maybe times that you've been harsh or responded in a way that wasn't helpful, responded out of anger. And so we want to work on this as a family, dealing with this forgiveness issue so it becomes comfortable for children and they know how to offer forgiveness as well.
If you have a problem with anger, you want to develop a commitment to becoming better, not bitter. You want to become an expert in what it means to forgive. That means you've got to do a lot of study and work and therapy on yourself in order to learn how to forgive. But you'll give your children a tremendous gift. As you model it and as you teach it to them, it'll be a valuable thing that will change the way your family relates. You see, we could just start sharing with you all the intricacies of relationships and what do you do with the complexity of relationships that single parents deal with. We could have started there, and that's where we're going to spend some of our time next week. But we find that when parents start moving into these very practical ideas, then they get slowed down by some of their own emotions. So we found it most helpful to try to deal with these things first before we move in that direction.
As Scott said there at the end, he and Joanne wanted to present material on guilt and anger first before they help you deal with all the relational dynamics that you experience. Let's join Scott and Joanne in session 2, where they talk about all the relationship you have in and outside your family. You might want to have a pencil and paper handy.
Well, I'm excited about tonight because this evening we're going to be talking about relational dynamics in family life. And this is the heart of what Joanne and I do in our counseling and in our teaching around the country is we talk about the relationships between people and families. And we try to troubleshoot those any way that we can. We're looking for solutions. We're looking for suggestions. And so we're going to help you this evening take apart the relationships in your family, look at them, dissect them, and then put them back together in a more helpful way, we hope. That's our goal here.
We have worked with single parents in counseling and spent some time in that area. And we've also had single parents come to our parenting classes that we've done over the years. And many of them have said that they found things helpful that we've shared. Any of our principles can be helpful in your family. But we believe there are some specific needs that you have as single parents. And we want to address some of those tonight. Some of the unique problems that you have, unique challenges, especially within the area of relationships.
People become single parents in a variety of different ways. Most of the time, people don't expect to become single parents. That's not what they're looking for in life. It just happens. Occasionally, though, you find someone who's single who is going to adopt some children, as this lady is going to do. She was telling me earlier. And then there are also people who become single parents through divorce or the death of a spouse. We have sometimes there's another parent involved in the situation somewhere out there interacting with the family, and sometimes not. Other times it's grandparents trying to raise a grandchild and a child at the same time. There's a lot of different ways that single parenting happens. And what we've tried to do is target the specific relational dynamics that most single parent families experience. So we're going to be sharing with you several principles that are going to help you in your family. And if there's some that don't specifically hit yet, they may in a little bit. If you've just got a baby at this point, you'll know where you're going as your child or children grow. But we hope that the principles we share will impact the way your family relates.
The ideas that we're going to share with you tonight, the suggestions that we're going to offer to you, are going to take some work. But we know that you have a limited amount of resources, time, and energy, especially as single parents. I think we all have a limited amount, of course, but especially single parents, is a lesser amount of resources to pull off of. And so we believe that the work you put into these specific areas will really pay off. And it may not be a lot of extra work that you need to do, but redirecting some of the things you're doing or just rethinking some of the decisions you're making will really pay off in the end and make the best of really the resources that you have.
Some relationships are draining. Other relationships are energizing and helpful. What we want to do is look at your family. So here's what we'd like you to do. Take a piece of paper there, and we're going to have you diagram your family. We do this in counseling situations. We do this as we're working with families, and you can do it yourself. What we want you to do is draw a circle for each member of your family. And what we're trying to do is we're going to look at these relationships to evaluate where the tension points are and how to strengthen relationships in the process.
I'm going to draw a circle for each person who's living in your home at least most of the time. You may have some people living in your home some of the time and another home other parts of the time, and we understand that. But at least the people who are in your home most of the time, and which is probably going to be a parent and then some children. And so you put a circle for each one of those, and you want to arrange them in a circle as if they were sitting around the table in a sense, because we want to look at the relationships between these people. We believe that you're going to benefit from treating your family as a team. And some of you may be already doing that. You view yourselves as a team, you're working together. We're going to look at that sense of teamwork tonight and talk about the benefits of being a team, whether it's two of you, five of you, no matter how many of you are in that set of circles, you're going to work as a team, and we're going to talk about that, how you can be successful together. Some single parents believe that because their home is broken, in a sense, it's they call it come from a broken home, that they can't be successful. And we don't believe that's true. We believe that you can be successful together with your children. In fact, next week we're going to share 10 success principles for working in a single-parent home. But today we're just going to look at a couple of those ideas, and one of them being teamwork. So we want to function as a team, and we're going to talk about how to do that.
All right, so we've got on your paper now circles that represent the people living in your home, the people that you would call your family. Now, what we'd like you to do is draw lines between them, one line between each circle, so that if you have two people in the family, you and a child, then you've got one line between them. If you've got three people, you've got three lines. If you've got four people, you have six lines. So you've got a line going from each person and then across so that you form six lines. Each one of those lines represent a relationship in your family. So with four people, you have six relationships, each person relating to another. Now what we want you to do is see those lines as representing the relationships in your family. And we want you to number them, put a number on each line that's going to describe the amount of conflict that exists in that particular relationship. So if you have very little conflict, we're going to put a one there. There's a lot of cooperation, you seem to be getting along fine, or those two people seem to be getting along fine, then we're going to put a one there. Where conflict is, there's a fair amount of conflict, then you're going to put a two. Conflict needs to be resolved, people are working through that on a regular basis. You want to put a three on those relationships where they've given up or they're not even dealing with the conflict. There's so much conflict, they're buried underneath it all. So those become the relationships that are really strained in your family unit. And what you're trying to do is evaluate all those so that we're going to try to work on those. We want to find out where the stress points are in the relationships. So we first want to write them all down, mark them, and see where we go from there.
Very many parents find this exercise helpful because it gives you a picture of your family, a picture of those relationships, and you can start evaluating them now. You've got a number next to them, and you can see, oh, these number three relationships, we really need to be working on those. The number one relationships, we can enjoy those a little bit. Maybe we can use the ones and twos even to help that relationship that's a three because we want to strengthen that relationship. And so we know where to target some of our energy is that number three relationship that we want to improve. We want to deal with some of the bad habits in that relationship. We want to look at what's causing that stress and help it to become a more healthy relationship. And we also want to make sure that as a parent, your relationship with each one of your children is as strong. You don't want any threes between you and a child because that's going to be a very difficult situation then. You want to look at the bonds that go from the parent to each of the children and try and improve those relationships because you're going to be working together with that child a lot. And if you're going to help that child to be successful, you want to work on that strong relationship. So the family is like a machine, getting things done, jobs to do, being successful in life. Some of those bonds you can look at are a little bit strained. And what we want to do is see this family functioning as a machine, and sometimes the machine needs a tune-up. We need to work on some of these relationships and strengthen them. So we want to first just take a look at those different relationships and which ones need our energy.
All right, now we're going to give you several principles for strengthening the team. Then we're going to talk about other relationships outside of the team that affect your family unit. So first we're going to focus on the team and try to help strengthen your family by giving you five teamwork suggestions. The first teamwork suggestion is to learn how to handle or teach your children how to handle crisis phone calls. These are calls you might get at work that say something like this: Mom, I'm at school and I forgot my lunch. Or, Mom, Tony and I are at home and he's being obnoxious. Could you please tell him to stop? You, by the way, are in an office full of people trying to get something done and also trying to talk to your child on the phone. Crisis phone calls aren't emergencies, but they are times when your children are stuck and need your leadership to get them unstuck. What are some examples of phone calls you've received like that? What kinds of things do kids call and want? Spend the night at grandma's house. So they call you while you're at work and ask you that question. Okay, what else? Okay, they want a friend to come over. Okay. Good. What else? Yes.
They want a report on the progress of the cat giving kittens.
Yes, okay.
They want to ride somewhere.
Yeah, Dad's taxi service, right? Yes. You know, the question is, do you and your children know how to solve problems over the phone? Those can be a real challenge. Some parents end up yelling on the phone. Some children end up bickering, and you're trying to talk to one child, then the other child, and finally they hang up on you. You know, I mean, it just becomes a very difficult thing. So one of the things you have to do in order to make the team strong is to deal with phone kinds of discipline relationship. You have to know how to deal with crisis phone calls. I was in Orlando, Florida, speaking a couple months ago, and I was the parent in charge because my wife was on a plane arriving home to my children in Lawrenceville, and she would be 3 hours before she got there. Grandma had left, and so my children were alone, my teenagers were alone for 3 hours, and I was in charge in Orlando during that 3 hour period of time. And I got a phone call from my kids, and they were having a relational problem. They just couldn't get along. And so I'm trying to help them, and I'm very present with my children in Lawrenceville, although I'm way down in Orlando, Florida, and I'm helping them talk through this, trying to figure out how to solve the problem. And we hung up the phone, and I got a message back on my message machine a few minutes later saying, "Dad, just want you to know, we worked it out, everything's fine." And that was great. That's the kind of things dads and moms like to hear. What we're trying to do is help our children know how to handle the relationship on the phone, and those times become very important. It's important for us to be able to address those issues in those tense moments and how to respond to them.
Crisis phone calls are common in any family. You know, kids are calling the parent for some reason, but they're even more common, of course, in a single-parent family because there's only one parent. And obviously, you can't be everywhere at the same time. So often, children are trying to solve a problem, and they need to make a phone call. And they need to know how to handle that. So what you need to do is be able to talk to your child ahead of time so they know what to expect, and you know what to expect. You've dealt with this. You've solved it, in a sense, ahead of time. You know how those conversations are going to go. See, children need to be willing to wait for an answer. Sometimes you can't talk to them right away, and you have to call them back in a few minutes. They need to be willing to wait. They need to be able to explain the problem to you. You need to be able to listen to that, understand what the problem is, maybe ask some questions. Then the child needs to be able to listen to an answer. It may not be the answer they want. They need to be able to accept no for an answer. They need to be able to evaluate your solution, maybe, and see if that's really going to work. This all needs to happen while you're on the phone, talking back and forth. If your child is in the habit of, you know, giving you a hard time when you say no, it's not going to work when you try to do it over the phone. So you want to work on some of these things at home when you're working with your child ahead of time so that you're prepared for those crisis phone calls.
Here's some suggestions for dealing with crisis phone calls. Number one, you want to teach children that when they call you, they may have to wait or you may have to call them back. That's just the facts of life. You may be busy. That's part of the deal. Secondly, you need to, as they call, you need to take time to listen and ask a lot of questions. Our temptation is to solve the problem quickly and just tell our children the first answer that comes to our mind, and often that creates more frustration and anger. We want to communicate to our children that we're not too busy to listen to them. Life is busy, but we're trying to also take our time and spend some time with them when they call and they need us. Thirdly, we may have to give them temporary advice that may not be the same advice that we would give them when we were at home. We might not say, "I want you two boys to sit down and work it out." We might just decide that one child needs to take it and the other needs to leave it. We might give some temporary advice in those situations in order to work with our children, but the most important thing here is that we're teaching our children how to solve problems for themselves. So we're looking for ways to help them solve the same kind of problem next time. These crisis phone calls actually become significant teaching times as you work with your children. And lastly, the child needs to be able to accept the answer that you give. Whatever that answer is, they need to be able to accept it as part of the deal. That's part of what crisis phone calls require. We're not going to be hanging up the phone on each other. That's not acceptable. We have to learn how to accept the answer, and part of maturity is to be able to accept an answer they might not be their first choice. But they have to be able to accept it and go on from there.
This is an important area of family life, just being able to deal with these little things that come up, because we don't want to just see them as a nuisance. We want to see them as an opportunity. What can we be teaching our children so they can handle these kinds of situations in a way that's productive and helpful? If a child is in the habit of arguing or badgering, you know, you're going to be on the phone for an hour. That can't happen in these kind of phone calls. So the child needs to be able to accept an answer and go on with life and be willing to deal with it some more later if they need to. But we need to, as parents, we need to see these phone calls as opportunities to teach our children something rather than just a nuisance that we have to hurry up and get through. We want to use them to our child's advantage.
Crisis phone calls don't end when your children grow up. I got a phone call a couple months ago from my son, who's 19 years old, 3,000 miles away, stuck on the side of the road with a dead car. Dad, well, I'm not sure what to do. I've not been in this situation before. And so here I'm trying to help my son in Los Angeles, while I'm here in New Jersey, solve a problem with his car in order to get back on the road. My wife was gone. I was in the kitchen, ran into a problem in the kitchen. I called my mother. You know, and I'm trying to get some advice from her. Crisis phone calls happen even when we get older. And why? We want our children to be able to come and ask parents for advice. It's a great source of wisdom. It's a great way to find solutions when you're stuck. And so we want to be teaching our children. That's a great place to go. Jesus never got a crisis phone call, but people who were in crisis often interrupted him. He took time with the woman who'd been bleeding for 11 years, with the man whose daughter was sick, with the father of a boy whose son had convulsions. Jesus was the kind of person you could interrupt. Are you, as a parent, the kind of person that can accept interruptions? It may not be crisis phone calls. It might be other kinds of interruptions. Can you be interrupted? Sometimes it means that parents need to learn some character qualities in order to make that work. They need to learn the grace. They need to learn tolerance. They need to learn patience to listen. Those are hard at those moments, but crisis phone calls are something that both children and parents can benefit significantly from.
So the first teamwork suggestion is to learn how to handle crisis phone calls. You as a parent need to learn how to handle them, and certainly you need to be teaching your children how to handle those kind of situations when they have to be solved or at least dealt with partially on the phone. A second teamwork suggestion is to lead family meetings. Single parents need to lead meetings, team meetings in a sense, with your children. They need to see you leading. They need to see you taking control, because when children see you leading, the family leading these meetings, they're going to feel more secure. They're going to be willing to follow because they see mom's in charge or dad's in charge. We're together as a family. We're having this team meeting. And within those team meetings, a lot of family stuff can be dealt with. Some problems between kids, not as discipline situations, but just, you know, they've got a concern of who's doing the chores and can we change our mind and who's going to do this chore and who's going to do something different, and things that we want to discuss together as a family. We want to have team meetings on a regular basis so that we can discuss those. Now, we're also going to deal with some things on an individual basis. We have to have individual meetings with our kids as well, but that's within the whole context of being a team.
One mom, we'll call Terry, came to us for counseling, and as we identified her structure of what the family looked like, we had three relationships. So there was mom, and there was a boy, and there was a girl. So we had a line down from mom to the girl, a line down from mom to the boy, and a line between the boy and the girl, identifying three different relationships. And as we examined the relationships in her family, the challenging relationship was a relationship between the two children. They were fighting all the time. That was the strained relationship. We worked with her for a long time, but one of the keys for her was to treat her children as individuals, not as a team. So the idea was to help them learn how to relate, not just as a team, as a unit that we're talking about here, but we also have to treat our children as individuals. They all have a name. We don't treat them all as a group. Now, as Terry worked with her kids, the individuality was emphasized, and the relationships that she had with each child was strengthened, and somehow that did a real number on the relationship between them. You see, the competitiveness, the comparison that exists sometimes between children, often is a competition for the relationship with mom. As she strengthened both relationships, she saw the conflict between them diminish greatly.
What Terry learned was that being a part of a team doesn't mean that we only have team meetings, but we also have, the team leader has individual meetings with each team member, helping each member know how they're part of the team, how they can fit into that team, and then helping all the members to appreciate the strengths that each team member has. So they're all individuals, but then they can work together as a team.
I like looking at Jesus as a model for parenting. Not that he had kids, but he discipled people. And we are discipling our children, teaching them, training them. He's a great model of a single parent. In fact, the model of God himself, he chooses to call himself a father in his relationship with us, the ultimate single parent. It's fascinating to look at God in that relationship as well. But Jesus had regular team meetings with his disciples. He taught them, he traveled with them, but he also worked with them as individuals. I like the story at the end of the Gospel of John where Jesus was explaining to the Apostle Peter how he was going to die. And Peter, as he's listening to Jesus talk, says, as he turns to the other apostle, John, what about him? Same kind of thing we have in family life all the time. I like Jesus' answer because I think it's the same kind of answer we can have with our children in order to teach them and train them individually. Jesus looked at Peter and says, what is it to you if I let him remain until I come again? In other words, what Jesus was saying to Peter is, you need to worry about what I'm talking to you about. Let's concentrate on you yourself, not on other people. You see, Jesus was emphasizing the individuality there. Now, the team meetings that you have with your children are not just discipline times. They can't just be negative. These are times when we're talking about the schedule or what kind of food we like to eat in this house or whether we're going to get a dog or how we're going to spend our vacation. They also talk about specific problems that not only parents bring up, but also children bring up. So children can bring up issues at the family meetings that we can talk about. As parents lead these, or take leadership, a single mom or single dad takes leadership in this meeting, they're demonstrating some significant qualities that children need to pick up from parents. The leading of team meetings teaches children about leadership. It teaches them about solving problems. And so the leading of those family meetings becomes a significant suggestion, we believe, that will cause your family to be stronger.
Teamwork suggestion number one is to handle crisis phone calls. Teamwork suggestion number two is to lead family meetings. And that's all good. Team meetings are good. But we also want to use teamwork suggestion number three, which is to teach children how to solve problems for themselves, teach them how to think independently. We have children who often don't have the adult supervision that maybe we'd like them to have, whether they need to be home after school on their own or maybe want to run out to the store and leave them home. Sometimes children are on their own and they need to be able to solve problems for themselves and be successful at that. I think when we're home with our kids then, the way we parent them even when we're home is important. I think sometimes the tendency to want to do for them because we're home and we can care for them and give them what they need. But really what they need is to learn how to solve problems for themselves. So if you ask Bill to take the trash out and the bag starts ripping, he may get frustrated and call for help. And you'll want to, you know, rush in and help him with it, take that bag out and fix it. And really what you might need to do is teach him how to solve that problem. Because you want to be thinking, well, how would he solve this problem if I wasn't here? Would he know what to do? And those are the kind of questions we want to be asking ourselves as parents so that our children learn to problem solve. They learn how to handle situations that may not be what they're used to, but what am I going to do with this situation? And we want to help our children grow in that area to be independent thinkers.
You have to teach children how to solve problems for themselves. Now, you want to be with your children. You want to be supervising them as much as you can or have another adult with them. That's just wisdom. But there are those times when you say, hey, I'm going to run over to the neighbor's house. I got to get something. And you think you can leave them for just a couple of minutes. What does it mean to be safe in the kitchen? What does it mean for a child who gets hurt? What do they do? How do they handle something if they need help right away and mom or dad isn't there? What is a child going to do when they break something or they get into conflict? Do they know how to handle these situations? Children need to know how to handle themselves if they get lost in the crowd or if they get injured somewhere that's not at home. You see, we have to teach our children how to solve problems for themselves so that they can manage life. Frankly, you just can't be there all the time. And often single parents are strained to try to, you know, you're trying to take this child to one activity and then run over to get this child from another one. And children are left alone or in other group situations for a period of time. How are they going to deal with the crises that they end up experiencing?
Sometimes children are on their own, you're not with them, and they need help. And they need to know how to call for help, who to call for help. If they can't reach mom or dad, who are they going to call? And so we need to answer these questions for our children even before they need to know. We need to be preparing the way so they know how to get help when they need it. If you're out with them and one of them gets lost, do they know what to do? You know, we used to tell the kids, go back to the place where we were together last, or find a grandma or a mom with kids. They're usually pretty safer. You want to give our kids instructions, though, so they know what to do in a crisis situation before it happens. Do some training ahead of time.
One family was driving across country. Dad was driving the van. Mom and the kids were all in the back of the van. This was at night. Everybody's sleeping, laying all over the chairs on the floor, wherever they, I mean, the seats in the car are on the floor. And Dad pulls into a truck stop, jumps out, goes to the bathroom, jumps back in the van, takes off, and they're driving another couple hours, and he says, honey, could you take over the driving? No response. Hey, kids, could you wake up Mom? Tell her, hey, come on, I need some help here. She's not here, Dad. What do you mean she's not here? She's not here, Dad. He pulls over. Look, sure enough, she's not there. It turns out that when he got out to go to the bathroom 2 hours ago, she also got out to go to the bathroom. And when he got back in the van, he just took off and drove away. 4 hours, of course, she waited in the truck stop while he drove 2 hours and drove back another 2 hours to get her. I mean, what are our kids going to do when we accidentally find ourselves in those difficult situations? How are they going to handle themselves in those kind of issues? We have to teach our children how to solve problems for themselves. Jesus taught his disciples how to solve problems for themselves. He sent them off two by two. He gave them instructions for handling themselves after he was gone. He regularly worked with them so that they would know how to handle life with confidence. And he also told them that he was with them. Now, we can't be with our children all the time, but we can teach them that Jesus can be with them all the time, and certainly we can give them a problem-solving plan that will carry them through some of the difficult experiences that they find themselves in.
As you talk about these kind of situations with your children, you want to give them a plan so they know what to do when they're in crisis. And frankly, all homes need this, not just single-parent homes. All kids need to know what to do when they find themselves in difficult situations and how to get help and what kind of people to get help from. But your kids are at an advantage because you know you need to teach those things. And I think some parents and some families, they try and get away with not teaching this. They figure, well, there's always going to be a parent home. And inadvertently, there's not a parent home, and something happens, and children aren't prepared for that. And so instead of viewing this training as something, it's too bad these kids have to learn this, you want to be thinking, this is great because my kids are getting responsibility training, they're learning to solve problems, and they're going to be having problems all their lives. I think the sooner we can teach them how to solve problems for themselves, view problems as opportunities, then we can really teach them things that they will benefit from for the rest of their lives. You know, they need to be able to define the problem, figure out, well, what is really the problem here? To think of some different solutions, to choose a solution, to report back after they've solved the problem, and then maybe you have to debrief about it. Maybe it wasn't the best choice that they chose, but they're learning, and you use it as a learning experience. And what could you have done differently next time? And you want to take these opportunities then and really view them as opportunities, not just as problems in your kid's life, but how can we benefit from this as a family?
Well, let's move on to another teamwork suggestion, number four, which is to develop relational routines. Children need routines. We know they need routines. We use the same routine in the morning often. We use the same routine in the evening when they go to bed. But we're talking about more than that. We're talking about not just buy the grocery kinds of routines or put the food away routines or here's the washing of the clothes or cleaning of the house kind of routines. We're talking about relational routines. Routines that talk about how do we handle instruction, for example. When you give your child an instruction, what kind of a response do you get? Well, if you and your child end up in an arguing match because of instructions or corrections, then you've developed a routine. A routine that may not be all that helpful. We're suggesting that you develop some constructive routines, and it's going to take some time. We know that one of the needs of single-parent families is that they don't have as much time. But we believe that that's why they need relational routines developed. It means investing some time now to teach your child what it means to be corrected. How do you want your child to respond when you correct them? There needs to be a routine that you go through that ends that correction time in a healthy way. If I were to correct you, how would you respond in a wise way? Well, let's bring that down to a child's level and talk about how are we going to correct a child and have that child respond in a healthy way. We're going to develop that routine so that we don't have to spend an inordinate amount of time in conflict. We're also going to develop instruction routines, or the routine that we have with children when we have to say no to them. So we're continually looking for ways to help our children develop these routines. They're going to take some time to get started, but in the end, they save a lot of time and energy.
You'll benefit a lot from developing relational routines because it will help you know what to expect. It will help your children know what to expect, especially in discipline situations. It's been thought through. You don't have to renegotiate it every time. Children know to come when they're called. They know that if you're going to give them a job, they have to say, okay, Mom, or okay, Dad. You want them to report back. You're going to check their work. These are all routines that are helpful in family life and keep things run smoothly. And if you do it on a regular basis, then children will respond to that, and they'll know what to expect as well. And you won't have to be retraining every time something needs to be done because you've got that routine set in place.
One other suggestion we just want to make about these routines is you practice them in relaxed times, when you've got extra time. If Saturday's a relaxed time, you're going to practice a routine because you've got time to work it out. It's hard to practice routines when you're getting pushed out the door or you've got to quickly get things done so you can get to the next event. What we're talking about here is trying to invest some time during relaxed moments in order to have relational routines that'll last as your children get into conflict in other difficult situations. So we don't practice in the grocery store. Okay, we practice in relaxed times in order to be successful when we get in the grocery store.
So we're talking about our family again. Remember, we drew those circles in the beginning. We're talking about the people who are in your home, and we're talking about some teamwork suggestions to make you successful together as a family. We're going to share one more of those with you, and then we're going to move on to relationships outside that team, other people that are a part of your lives. But the last teamwork suggestion, number five, is to choose leisure, social, and service opportunities with your children in mind. Now, that may mean that you hire a babysitter and you leave your kid with a babysitter so that you can get out on your own for a little while. Or it may mean that as a team, you go to a party and you're a team at that party. Or it may mean that you do a job together as a team. Maybe you teach a Sunday school class together, but you're the team, you're going to do it together. Maybe you relax together at the pool. Whatever it is, you want to keep in mind your whole family, the whole team, and what's going to help you to be successful. And you want to talk about that teamness that you have. You know, we're the Miller team. We work hard, we play hard. You want to develop that sense of teamwork as you maneuver around in life, not just in the home, but outside the home as well.
What we've tried to do here is give you some suggestions for working as a team with your unit. Now, you may not have your unit to a place yet where it's ready to function, but we're trying to encourage you to start building the foundations in order to get there. If you have a little baby, you're going to start working with that baby in a way that fosters a sense of teamwork as you're growing. If you have teenagers you're working with, you really need to work on this idea of teamwork in order to be successful with them as a single parent. A good instruction routine goes like this. Let's say that my son's name is Billy. And so I say, the first thing I have to teach Billy, who's, let's say, 5 years old at this point, is that he needs to come when I call him. We're not going to have yelling matches across the house, across the parking lot. That when I'm going to give Billy an instruction, it's going to be when we're close together. It's a positive way of treating each other. And so I'm going to call Billy, and Billy needs to learn how to come. We may spend some time just teaching that so that Billy learns how to come over to me. Whether Billy's 5 or 10 doesn't make a whole bunch of difference. We're still going to have conversations together. And sometimes that means that I come close to Billy, and other times it means Billy comes close to me. That's the first step in the routine, is that we're going to get close together. The second step in the routine is the child's going to say, "What, Mom?" or "What, Dad?" The idea is that the child's responding. They know that we've called them, they come over, they respond. We then go to the next step in the routine here, which is to tell children what we expect them to do, what we want them to do. That child, "I'd like you to get your shoes because we're going to go and run errands." We need to, the next step in the routine is to get a response from Billy, which says, "Okay, Mom," or "Okay, Dad." Billy says, "Okay, Mom." And that's important because it tells us that he heard what we said. Often, you know, you go back to check on him, "I never heard you say that." Well, we're going to get rid of that real quick here because we're establishing this routine, you see. So Billy says, "Okay, Mom." He needs to go do it, and then that's not the end of it. Unfortunately, this is where parents don't carry it to the next step. Billy needs to go do what he's been asked to do, and he needs to report back. That's the next step, reporting back, and then the parent needs to release him. So that, you see what we've done here in a routine? We've started at the beginning, and we've put 7 or 8 steps, right? Okay, so we've given 7 or 8 steps here in a routine that takes a child from the point we call him to the time we release him. And he needs to understand how to function in this kind of routine, because it's the precursor to responsibility training. We want Billy to be able to take a job, go do it, and report back to his boss someday and be released, not to just go do it and disappear, which is what a lot of children do. What we're suggesting is that you take apart the instruction routine or the correction routine or whatever it might be, break it down into steps so that child learns how to do it, and it'll save a lot of energy in the end.
Developing the routines can be difficult at first, but the time and energy you invest in developing the routines has tremendous payoff, because once a child gets into that routine, then they know what to expect, you know what to expect, this is where it's going to go. And as soon as they veer off that routine, well, then you bring in the correction routine, and correction looks the same. And so you want to be working with these routines, because in the end, it really uses up less energy when you just go into that routine then.
Let me just suggest that if you're interested more in this idea of routines, we have books that we've written on the family that talk about these kinds of routines that you work with your children. We talked about the instruction routine. 2 chapters in our book called 8 Secrets to Highly Effective Parenting talk about a correction routine and how to implement that in family life. So you can look at those resources if you'd like.
Scott and Joanne have shared a few ideas about relationships inside your family. In the next tape, they will continue this idea and share some ways to deal with people outside your family.